top Rari with three creep. Titan be in the middle of trial with three snitches. And I hit up every club in your city, what that? I be in every club in the hood, what that? Pull up, jump out, stunning like I was baby on my cowboy shit. Like in the 80s, who think he is Slick Rick or Dana Dane? Think he rock him or something, look at his chain. YSL from head to toe, I'm Dougie Fresh. Looking like I came to play Mitchell and Ness. And he with a watch like that, he need attention. Your man don't ball out like that, you need to bench him. What? R.I.P. 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 R.I.P.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Make sure you wear your Silver Shamrock masks.
Wear your Silver Shamrock mask. Don't forget the big giveaway tonight at 9 or 10, whatever it said. Finally back. Technically, we had a show that we pre-recorded, but we didn't upload it. So
yeah,
we're back on air for the first time in a while.
And on Halloween. On Halloween. And before we get started, I have something to get.
Before we get started, we got to say this is Frankenstein on air.
Well, this is Frankenstein
live from Bor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. We have been out of commission for a while because a gigantic storm smashed into our state, and I crashed my car. I did not.
I stayed home.
But it did mess everything up. I was without a car for a while, so I could not come back to do the show for the past 2 weeks. But now I have a new car.
It's amazing. It's awesome. And I wanted to say, I was at the video store the other day, and I saw
as
something that reminded me of you. I had to get it for you. And this is a real gift, okay?
Yeah,
this
is a real gift. Hellraiser 3.
Not Hellraiser 8, you know, not any of that. It's this. I thought you'd like this. It's a pin.
Oh, that actually is really cool.
Yeah.
I do like that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pin for your jacket.
It is a Reanimator collectible enamel pin.
Yep.
It's got the reagent ooze in a syringe on it, and it's covered in snakes. And sorry, we were being waved to. So, yes, today is Halloween. I am in costume. Sage is not because they are a curmudgeon, a grouch, a Scrooge.
Oh, calm down. My costume just didn't come in time.
They are going to be visited by three ghosts of Halloween past, present, and future.
So who's the ghost of Halloween past?
Bill Cosby.
Okay. All right. wow.
All right,
moving on.
So coming up, we're going to be talking about recently watched films that we had. We're going to do a little bit of a new segment. We're going to do one on the history of Halloween, just because it is Halloween. And I'll talk a little bit about we did just play the opening intro. That was the jingle from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. So we'll talk about Halloween 3 a little bit. Then we got our history segment, which is a bit of a double whammy today. We got Psycho and Night of the Living Dead. No one probably remembers, we left off with the 50s last time, so now we're on to the 60s. We will be continuing that. And then what is the other movie you chose for us today?
I watched Lake Mungo.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's one hell of a one to talk about.
Yeah, I watched Lake Mungo, I watched Midnight Mass, and I'm going to talk about some movie news. So.
All right. Well, coming up first, we have a little spooky Halloween movie song for you guys. It's
Common Shiner's Social Mediasticist.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
A little bit, yeah.
It sounds like a normal song, but if you watch the YouTube video on the music video online, it's a cute little video about like Jason Voorhees and all the slashers that they are all in high school.
They're all in school, and he falls in love with Carrie, and
that's the plot twist. I don't have to go with that.
Oh, sorry, but it's great.
I'll see you guys in 5 minutes and 26 seconds. See ya.
reading about my faith through every photo post and status update. While you wait for 3 and 4, honey, I just can't play anymore.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
That was Common Shiner's social media sickest. I can say it now. All right. And now we're continuing. You're still listening to Frankenstein's on Air on Hawk Radio, the official radio show station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. And this is our very scary, very spooky Halloween episode.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about movies we recently watched, and I'm assuming they're spooky and Halloweenish.
Yeah. So do you want to go first or...
I don't think I said it's happy ween, Sage.
Okay.
I hope your ween is happy.
Okay. All right.
Have a happy one.
All right. Well, then I'm going to go first. And I would like to talk about, me and Tim watched a horrible movie last night, and it was so bad, I'm not even going to talk about it. It just sucked.
What is it called?
St. John's Wort.
Don't watch it. It's got some very weird color grading and editing issues, but mostly it's just one of those boring low-budget films where people walk around for 90 minutes.
Exactly. So instead, I'm going to be talking about Lake Mungo.
Was that going to be your recently watch, or did you want to do that as the later segment?
That'll be my recently
watch. We're already talking about it. Lake Mungo.
Lake Mungo, this... is it an indie? It's an indie film.
It's Australian.
Indie Australian film. It's a mockumentary. I wouldn't call it found footage, but...
It's a mockumentary. There is some found footage.
There's a little bit, but it's mostly mockumentary. And it's
directed by Joel Anderson.
Okay.
It came out in 2010. That was a little earlier than 2010, but it's 2010. And a budget of $1.7 million, and this is really sad, box office returns of $29,000.
Oof.
So it did not do good. It's kind of like it's got like a second wind, because if you go on like any horror circles on the internet, and people ask for like a really scary film, this is one that the name keeps popping up.
Yeah, and it's a great movie.
It's wonderful.
Very well acted. That's one of the things I noticed when rewatching this is that
it's a convincing documentary, and that's what it tells you on it.
That's kind of what I was shocked by.
Let's set up the plot. The plot of the film is like... it's set up as like a ghost documentary about this family that's experiencing haunted happenings, and but because it's a documentary, or mockumentary, it feels very real and grounded, and it's all surrounding the death of their daughter, the brother's sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She died mysteriously on a trip.
They were on a picnic.
Yeah, she drowned.
She drowned. They were on a picnic at like a dam and. Mm. And she drowned, and the opening of the movie is them, you know, dealing, just talking about the trauma and whatnot. And what this movie does insanely well is...
Don't spoil the big scare.
I'm not going to spoil the big scare.
I'm just saying in general.
I'm not going to spoil the big scare. Okay, but what this movie does really well is it tells you all these little details about how, like, the family dealt with the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you really there's really some moments... in there that feel like it feels like an actual documentary. It's insane.
What I like is that this film, because I mean, you already always have some awareness in the back of your head that this is just a movie,
mm-hmm.
but it really lulls you into that feeling of reality, because at several points in the film they debunk things.
Mm-hmm.
They debunk certain photographs, or a certain natural phenomenon are explained naturally.
Yeah.
And some things are less explainable. And so when things really that are really supernatural happen, it makes them hit that much harder.
Oh yeah.
And
it's amazing.
One thing I hear a lot of people say is that this film often gets like overhyped, I feel.
Yeah.
Not for me, but a lot of people, they'll go and say, oh, this is the scariest film I ever seen in my life. And then people go in expecting something really intense, and then it's a very like brooding, slow-paced film, and then like, oh, it was boring. And so don't ever go in expecting something truly intense. But if you want like a slow-paced, creepy haunted house mockumentary, it is very effective, very good film.
Very effective. I like it.
What else would you want to say about Welcome Home?
I just wanted to say that it's just really a... It's just really an amazingly acted movie. I really like the acting in this, and I really like how it's set up. It's well written and everything, and I love it. I think it's really awesome. That's really all I got to say.
Hell yeah, dude. Okay. Did you watch anything else recently? I can talk about something I watched recently.
What else did I watch recently? I watched. I mean, we talked about Terrifier 3 on the pre-recorded episode.
Yeah, but I don't think many people are going to listen to that, so let's just give a brief synopsis that Terrifier 3 was bad. I have not watched it.
Terrifier 3 was not good.
Not as bad as 2, you said.
But it's the best one so far.
That seems to be the running trend where Terrifiers are... Although, I like 1 more than 2, but 2 is better made than 1.
I just think that Terrifier 3, this is the only thing I'll say about it, I just think this feels like an actual movie. The first two...
That's very high praise for a Terrifier
film. That's what I'm saying. Is like this one to me, maybe you'll have a differing opinion, but when I went and saw it, I was like, this feels like an actual film. And I really liked that about it. But it wasn't enough to carry.
And I mentioned this in the pre-recorded podcast as well, but I want to say it again. Transformers movies are terrible, poopy, poop fart from a butt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have watched the first three. I've not watched the fourth one yet. They are genuinely the worst films I've ever seen that are, like, major. I mean, like, we watched that one Japanese film that was, like, very boring, but also, like, that's an independent film,
yeah.
And I'm going to forgive it more. These are, like, major studio productions, and they're garbage.
Yeah.
They are incredibly sexist. They're incredibly horrible, racist. They have, like, horrible, very dated military Iraq war propaganda in them. George Bush shows his feet off at one point. That's not a joke. There's Transformers gonads hanging in your face. So that's also not a joke. So many weird things happen. The film is obnoxious. All three of them are. Shia LaBeouf is the most annoying protagonist I've ever heard in my life. And I am very mad at my friend for making me watch these. Not really. That's a joke. But yeah. Everything else is real. The movies are terrible. Don't watch them unless you want to laugh at something.
Yeah. Okay, well,
you want to go to our next song?
Yeah.
All right, so our next song coming up is Killer Creature Double Feature by Nim Vind. See you guys in 2 minutes exactly.
November 5th is Election Day. Can we count on you to be a voter? Voter turnout is expected to be high.
Hey, hey, this ain't okay.
Welcome back. That was Killer Creature Double Feature by Nimmt Vind. I really just wanted to say that title again because it's really fun to say. You're listening to Frankenstein's on Air, live from Ybor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College that has not changed. And now let's talk about today.
Yeah.
Today is October 31st, 2024. It's Ween. It's Halloween. And I thought it'd be fun to talk about what Halloween is, what happens on Halloween. You know, we do all these weird things. We get in costumes. We carve faces into gourds, and we ask for candy. Well, kids do, but sometimes adults do, too. Well, how did we get here? I think everyone knows that Halloween is a pagan holiday originally. It comes from the great island of Ireland. It was a Celtic celebration celebrating the beginning or the end of summer and the beginning of fall. Or maybe it's the end of summer, beginning of winter, whatever. Point is, this was seen as the night when the barrier between the living and the dead was at its thinnest, and that evil spirits could roam the world and do whatever the freaking heck they wanted to, brother. A lot of like very old Celtic traditions back in the day, they were, everyone would have their own like little fire in their homes and their huts. And during the day, while they were out harvesting the autumn crops, they let that fire die. They would not rekindle it. And then at the end of the day, at the Halloween, or the, back then they called it Samhain, or as it's pronounced literally Samhain, but it was pronounced in Celtic as Samhain. They'd let that fire, they'd go to the big celebration. They had these great giant bonfires. They were lit by a giant wheel, a big wheel of fire that would spin around and spark flames on the rocks below it. And that's how they would light these big bonfires. And then they would use those bonfires to relight their own home. So it's kind of like a big symbol of community to take something communal and bring it back to your own home so everyone feels connected and happy. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, big fun times, dancing, all that great stuff. The bonfires were meant to guide souls back to the underworld if they were lost around us. The masks were meant to disguise us from evil spirits so they would not think that we were humans, and then they wouldn't scare us or damn our souls or something. And now, apple bobbing actually is a Roman tradition that when Rome came over and conquered England, did not take Ireland, but that's where that came from, because that was in autumn. They had not a similar holiday, but they also had a holiday around the time of Halloween called Pomona, and that's where apple bobbing comes from. It kind of over time merged with Halloween. But then things started to change when the good old Catholics came over and did a little thing called conquer and convert. And they changed it because they didn't want these pagan holidays, but also holidays are fun, and it was very hard to get people to stop celebrating them. The Catholic Church did this over and over and over again, where they would take pagan holidays and they would turn them into Christian holidays. And so Samhain became All Hallows' Eve, became Halloween. They chose All Hallows' Eve as Hallows' Day is All Hallows is November 1st. But they figured that All Hallows' Eve is to celebrate all the dead saints and martyrs. And so they figured it was like, honoring the dead is kind of similar to what they were doing as Samhain, so it's close enough. And a lot of those old pagan traditions were allowed to carry over. And then jack-o'-lanterns is an interesting one. That one, and I'm getting all of this from history.com, just so you guys know. I'm not just pulling this out of my butt. Jack-o'-lanterns come from an old story about this guy named Stingy Jack. And Stingy Jack was a bit of a jerk. And he was he was a troll. He would troll the devil. And he ended up trapping the devil, I believe, into a tree. And the devil was like, dude, let me out. I don't want to be here. And Jack said, I'll let you out if you promise me I never go to hell. And he was like, fine, deal. And then that was the deal. And Jack lived the rest of his life. Then he died and he went to heaven. And heaven was like, dude, you're a jerk. You're a troll. I don't want you in here. Go back. Go to hell. But the devil's like, you can't come into hell. I told you you couldn't. So now Jack has just basically his soul is stuck on earth. And the only way that he can light his way around at night is with pumpkins. I don't know why that was part of the rule. But part of the rule was that he can only light his way around with pumpkins. And that's why you have Jack O' Lanterns.
I see.
And also, I think he carved scary faces in them. That kind of goes into the idea of warding away evil spirits, but it goes back to more of a Catholic thing than the pagan thing. Anyways, Halloween did not come over to the States until a little thing called the Irish Potato Famine killed a whole lot of Irish people because the English were horrible at managing a famine. Intentionally, they were bad at managing that famine. And so a lot of Irish ended up emigrating to the United States, and with them they brought their traditions. And then the first recorded instance of trick-or-treating was in 1911. It's a very recent thing. And then... Excuse me, sorry, one second. Anyways, so trick-or-treating began in 1911, and then Halloween got really big in the 50s once commercialism was more viable and giant corporations could mass-produce costumes for children so they didn't have to make their own. And then once it was easier to get a costume, that meant more people were willing to celebrate the holiday. And that's how we got to where we are today. And I think that's a nice little rundown of what Halloween is and why we do it. And now let's talk about another movie, because this is a movie podcast, and there's no better one to go from there to this, which is what we played at the beginning, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
One of the films ever.
I actually really like
it. No, I love Halloween 3, but it is an odd film. For anyone out there listening, you probably know or are familiar with the Halloween series of movies. In Halloween 1, Michael Myers, a scary guy in a white mask, stabs people. And then in Halloween 2, he comes back and he stabs people. And then the synopsis of Halloween 3 is that an evil Irish warlock who runs a novelty gag corporation is creating evil masks with lasers in them that shoot kids' brains and turn them into bugs.
Yep.
And that is Halloween. And he has an army of robot henchmen.
Yeah.
And Michael Myers is not in the film at all.
One of the hardest ending scenes ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, great ending to that film.
Yeah.
And so basically our protagonist, a very odd doctor played by Tom Atkins, goes down this rabbit hole of trying to figure out what's going on with this company, Silver Shamrock, and their weird masks. And he ends up discovering this big conspiracy to kill kids. And I should mention that... the villain itself is played by an amazing actor, Dan O'Herlihy. He plays Connell Cochran, and he gives an amazing speech at the end to explain why he's doing what he's doing. And he gives a wonderful speech about the history of Halloween, back when it was a serious religious holiday, about how everything I just said about the spirits and the barrier being thinnest. Mm-hmm. And he talks about there being a human sacrifice of children back at original Halloween traditions, which I don't think that's true. I saw nothing. I think they did sacrifice goats and like other small things. It's debatable whether or not human sacrifice was involved with ancient traditions of Halloween, but nothing firm. But it's a movie. And so basically his plan is to, at the big giveaway at 9, all the kids are going to gather around their TVs, watch the commercial, and it'll trigger that little laser in their masks and basically cause the largest human sacrifice in history to bring Halloween back to its spooky roots.
I want to mention that I watched Halloween Kills the day it came out.
Yeah.
And I remember having a very visceral reaction to when the Silver Shamrock masks appear in that movie, and I was like,
"They're great."
What?
They're also in Halloween 2018.
I didn't know that.
They are. See, there when the scene when Michael is walking around the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And he originally, David Gordon Green, wanted to end Halloween Ends with like a post-credit scene where it showed a Silver Shamrock factory producing Michael Myers' mask. And it was like a big twist, like, oh my God, Michael was being controlled by Silver Shamrock the whole time, which I'm glad they didn't do. Yeah. And they talked him out of it, but also it would have been kind of funny.
It would have been kind of hilarious.
It could have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, Halloween 3. What was I saying? Or what was I on about? About the big speech. And then you might be wondering, how are they powering these lasers? Is it magic? Is it technology? It's a little bit of both. This is kind of the pitch for this film was witchcraft meets the video age. And so these microchips that shoot the lasers are powered by Stonehenge. They stole Stonehenge, like the big rocks. They took one of those. They don't explain how. They just said, hey, we had a hard time getting this here, but we have Stonehenge in our evil lair, and then we're chipping away at it and putting little pebbles of it in these microchips. And I guess that causes lasers that turn your head into bugs. And all of this sounds so ridiculous, but it's honestly a pretty great movie. And a really, it's a great Halloween movie. Go watch it right now for the holiday. It's got a wonderful atmosphere to it. And if you're wondering why the film is so weird as it is, this comes from Dustin McNeil's book, Taking Shape. He does a great job at explaining what happened with this film. Basically, John Carpenter, who made the first film, wrote and directed the first film, and then wrote the second one, he was contractually obligated to come back for three films. And he said, fine. He really didn't want to come back for this because he didn't want to do any other sequels. But he said, I'll come back for Halloween 3 if we make it an anthology franchise. And so the idea was that every Halloween sequel would be a different story taking place on Halloween, and eventually they would abandon the Michael Myers character. But of course, people went to go see this in the theaters, and they said, why is there an Irish warlock? Where's Michael Myers? They got confused, and they hated it. And then Halloween 4 went back to being just Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that's all for our brief little Halloween segment. We'll go to our next song break now. It's another bit of a spooky song. This is Dig Up Her Bones by The Misfits. See you guys in a few minutes. Welcome back. You are
Hello.
Listening to Frankenstein's On Air on Hawk Radio, the official radio show station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. That was Dig Up Her Bones by The Misfits. And now we're going to go into our, well, we already kind of had a history segment, but we're going to do another history segment on the history of horror movies. Last time we did Halloween, not Halloween, but last time we did the 50s. We did Invasion of Body Snatchers and the original Godzilla. And now we're moving on to the 1960s. And this is another one where I couldn't just choose one film. I chose two films. We're going to talk about Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock and A Night of the Living Dead. I think these are two films that really embody the decade pretty well. In the 50s, we saw a lot of themes about conformity or reflections on conformity and the Red Scare. And in Godzilla, we saw a lot of reflections on World War II and fears of nuclear holocaust, and then and the impacts of like a rampant militarism and science gone awry. In the '60s, we see much more. How do I put this? Like it's kind of, it's counterculture. Sixties is a decade of counterculture. It's where we take back from the very conformist 1950s and in unique ways. And I think Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho is reflective of this in ways that people don't really expect. I mean, everyone knows the plot of Psycho, but it's about this girl steals a bunch of money on a whim, and she goes to a motel to hide out on her way out of state, and she encounters a serial killer there, and the mystery is, who is the killer? Is it the nice Mr. Bates, or is it his mother? And of course, at the end, it's revealed that Norman Bates has multiple personality disorder, which is no longer called that, but back then it was called multiple personality disorder, and he's actually dressing up as his mother and believes he becomes his mother because of severe neglect and control issues that his mother put on him. So he couldn't, once she died, he could not get over her. And also he killed her. He killed his mom. But yeah. So I think in Norman Bates, you see someone who is so, so normal. I mean, his name is Norman. And he's so, I mean, he's awkward, but he's like, so pristine and normal, and then underneath him, and he's trying so hard to conform, and it's driving him nuts. Mm-hmm. He can't, and that lashes out in violent and violence towards women specifically, which I think is another important aspect of this movie. I don't like to go too far with most slashers because this is also the granddaddy of slasher films. Technically, Peeping Tom predates this film, but it's when when slashers are becoming popular, Psycho is what they look to for inspiration. I don't like going too far when I'm talking about like movie analysis into the realm of is a knife a phallus, for lack of a better word, symbolically. Because I think it can, you can kind of go a little too far with that. But in Psycho, it definitely is. The act of stabbing, I forgot her name, the act of stabbing the main actress is definitely meant to evoke, well, you can get the idea here of what's going on there. Especially in the shower, after a scene where he is he's using a peeping hole to spy on her while she's getting into the shower. And it's very fascinating. To think about that, to think about how in the 1960s especially, it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a progressive film because it's definitely of its era still, mm-hmm. but it's very ahead of its time messaging about how this conformity to a like a patriarchal society kind of expresses itself, drives men crazy and acts them to, it can push them towards violence towards women and how it hurts women. Yeah, I feel like It's a lot to talk about that film. It's hard to talk about quickly, and also I'm a little stupid, guys, but I'm doing my best to get the message across to you. And also, I think just from a technical standpoint, the way this film, not technical, but maybe a writing standpoint, the way this film is written is so great. Because you start the film off, and it's like a regular Alfred Hitchcock thriller. There's something scary about it. She's a woman, she steals money, and she's running from the cops. And then you get to the motel, and things get a little weirder. The lighting gets a little darker. And then all of a sudden, from 0 to 100, the film twists, and now it's a murder mystery. And then from there, you go into like, you start following the detective around, and you think, okay, now we're going. And so I think from a 1950s, 60s audience perspective, you're thinking, okay, now we're into like a noir detective type film. I found my real protagonist this time. It's a detective, and he's going to solve the case and save the day. And just before you think he's going to nail Norman Bates, he dies. And then. We have two more characters from the beginning, and one we haven't met before is the main sister's main actress's sister and her boyfriend, who we only saw for one scene. Now they're trying to solve the rest of the crime, and at the very end, they split the two up. The man goes into the house. No, the man stays with Norman, and the woman goes off into the house to look for Mrs. Bates. And so now the audience is waiting in fear. They don't know who's going to live or die anymore because they've lost all trust in the director to give us like a predictable plot. And we don't know if the attack is going to come against the man from Norman or against the woman from Mrs. Bates. And, of course, the answer is a bit of both because Norman Bates and Mrs. Bates are the same person. Very interesting, very clever writing tactic, and you can see why it was so popular when it came out. The other film we'll talk about from the 1960s is Night of the Living Dead by George Romero, and I love all of the Night of the Living Dead trilogy movies. I don't like Land of the Dead, but I do like Dawn, Day, and Night of the Living Dead. This is the first one, and I like this movie because this is very indicative of where the genre was going at that time period. This is a very, very low-budget, independent horror film, and that's what the genre is going to be dominated by for the next 20, even till today. Cameras are getting easier to acquire from people that weren't a major studio, and so not any Joe Schmo could make a movie, but it was getting to that point where indie films were more viable, and horror films are very low-budget and cheap to make. And this is a very simple film. It's just zombies. It's the very first zombie film, and they attack a house. It's a group of kids, or not kids, a group of people trying to survive in a house and get along together to fend off this evil horde. Notably, what I want to talk about this film is how much it represents. It came out in 1968, and it feels like the most 1968 film ever made. So you have, this is like the height of the Vietnam era. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated several months prior. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was assassinated. Not Jr. No, he's still with us. Still Robert Kennedy, who the other one.
He's still cutting
Wales,
man.
Robert Kennedy was assassinated recently, and tons of protests going on. I don't think Kent State was just yet, but there's a lot of turmoil going on. And this film notably stars a black male lead in 1968, which is practically unheard of for that time period. And the whole time, he's our main character, he's our protagonist, and no one really listens to him. The whole time, he has a hard time getting the older white man, the father, to listen and take orders from him. They spend the whole time arguing, and at one point it gets so bad that the other guy tries to kill Ben, our protagonist. And there's one person, Tommy, who tries to mediate between them, but really no one is listening to Ben, even though he's the most sensible and reasonable person. One sec.
Hello?
We're on air.
We're on.
Sorry, someone just walked in. Anyways, so Night of the Living Dead. The movie ends with, I'm going to spoil it because it's kind of hard not to say spoil without talking what I want to say. Everyone dies except for Ben. And then, then at the end, Ben comes up from the basement. There is a big mob of police officers and rednecks hunting down all the rest of the zombies. And they see Ben come up. They think he's a zombie and they shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of impossible not to see that in a political lens in this time period of all this assassination and political unrest.
Yeah.
It feels, it's almost impossible to, I think I just wrote my makeup off. Mm-hmm. Did you mention that I'm wearing a costume?
Oh, yeah, you are.
I'm dressed up as Ash right now because I'm going into work soon from the Evil Dead movies. But anyways, but the fascinating thing is that George Romero says that this film was not meant to be political at all. He just cast Ben because he was the best, the role, gave the best audition.
Yeah.
And that everything else from it was just kind of a coincidence. And I think it comes from this idea of, I think this is a direct quote from George Romero, where he called it cultural osmosis, where the things that are going on around you kind of influence your art without you even realizing it. And so looking back on it, even he was like, I can't deny Night of the Living Dead is an extremely political film, but I wasn't even trying to make it so. I think that's really fascinating. And so we can see that concern for social injustice, that concern, that awareness of things happening in the world and the news around them, and also just the idea of being a low-budget and very hyper-violent film. That is where the genre is moving off. Night of the Living Dead isn't super violent, but for 1968, it was. This is all those scenes of zombies chewing meat off the bone. And so as horror films would go on, and we'll see that more next week when I talk about the 70s, we can see that films were getting more violent, lower budgets, and a lot of them, or at least the good ones, they all have something to say about the world around them because they're made by a new wave of young, hippie youths who have a lot to say about what's going on. Anyways, we got one more song for you guys before we get into our last segment. It's Killer Clowns by the Dickies. You're listening to Frankenstein's On Air on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. And now we're going to get into our movie news.
Movie
What's
news.
What's going on? Okay. Oh, I see you on your phone. We're going to talk about.
Yeah, I so a live-action Outlast movie is in
I'm
the works.
I'm excited for that. I really, really like Outlast.
So
I don't
really
like many horror games, but that one's one I
So I really like Outlast 1. I think it's got a great story. It's fun. But I really, really dislike Outlast 2.
Outlast 2 is fine.
I don't
But we're not adapting Outlast 2. This is Outlast 1.
Outlast 1. I'm glad about that. Yeah. I'm just saying, I really don't like Outlast 2.
And I think Outlast 1 is, like, genius. Like, I can't say what, but I was not sober when I played that game, and it made it all the more insane, and I had a blast, and I'm such a big liberal, and so all the political themes in that movie I was vibing with, and I was like, oh my god, these devs are geniuses, and I thought it was an amazing story, and I'm really, really, really excited for a movie to come out.
So I'm excited for that.
As long as it's not poopy.
Yeah, as long as it's not bad. Next up is Steven Soderbergh's next movie, Presence, is getting some posters have released. I'm not sure if a trailer released or not, but Presence is a horror movie shot from the perspective of a supernatural entity. Could be a demon, could be a ghost, but it's all from that perspective.
That's
which
cool.
Isn't one of my favorite movies is that.
What movie?
Resolution.
I've heard of it.
It's one of my top four movies of all time, and it's that same premise. But this is still, I want to see it. I like Steven Soderbergh, so that could be.
What else has he done?
Let me pull it up. Steven Soderbergh, because I want to get his full. Steven Soderbergh. He has done Ocean's 11, Logan Lucky, Magic Mike, Contagion. Have you seen Contagion? Contagion's really good. A lot of action stuff, but this isn't a horror movie, and I'm excited to see what he can do with
That's interesting.
Let's see. Nicolas Cage is on campaign right now to be nominated for supporting...
President?
No.
Oh.
To be nominated for supporting actor for Long Legs. I still haven't seen Long Legs, so...
Oh, we should make a brief shout-out. By the next time we are in this air, we will have a new president-elect.
We will!
Please go vote, guys.
Please go vote. This might already be over. Well, no. Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell is having a limited theatrical run.
That's fun. He's making a new horror movie. I think it's starting filming in January, I believe.
Oh, fun. I'll be honest. I've never seen Drag Me to Hell.
It's very good. It's like Evil Dead expanded universe. I mean, it's not Evil Dead, but like it feels very Evil Dead.
Feels very Evil Dead. Okay. Hugh Grant's new horror movie, Heretic, came out, and people really like it, apparently.
Okay, good for him.
So, good for Hugh Grant. What else? There's a couple other things, like new posters for Nosferatu, if you are...
Did we talk about the 2000 Real Live Rats on this podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still really excited for that film and the 2000 Live Rats that Willem Dafoe will be acting along with.
Me too. And also, Andre Overdahl is directing the Bendy and the Ink Machine movie.
What? They're making a what?
Making a Bendy and the Ink Machine movie.
We will not be there.
And Andre Overdahl has been announced as the director.
We will not be there.
If you don't know who Andre Overdahl is, he
We will not be watching.
He did The Last Voyage of Demeter and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So
we will not be watching.
This one I want your opinion on. They released first look images of the It prequel series, Welcome to Derry.
Why? Can I see the images?
Yeah. So.
Is it set in the past?
Yeah, it's...
like, how
it
far?
Says,
it should be set in, like, the early 1900s.
It's set in 27 years before the events of It.
Oh, that's right. The new ones are set in the 80s, so that one's just going to be in the 50s. So it's just going to be, like, fart from a butt. I didn't like either of the new It movies, and I don't want a prequel series, and I don't want.
Yeah.
Stop.
Andy Muschietti will be directing 4 of the 9 episodes, and Bill Skarsgård will be returning as Pennywise.
Cool, whatever. Don't care. Didn't ask. I did ask, but...
Let's see. There's a new Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
The Simpsons? Homer?
Homer.
I love Homer and his funny son, Bart.
His funny son, Bart. Yep. And 10 years ago today, Nightcrawler was released. So
what is Nightcrawler?
It's a Jake Gyllenhaal movie about an insane man. So that's the movie news we got.
Okay.
Any thoughts on that?
I don't want a Bendy and the Ink Machine movie. I don't want to watch it. It's probably going to be a big pile of poopy poop fart.
Yeah.
And I'm mad that they're making one.
I honestly, a shrug is all I can give to that, is what? To that movie, because, like,
okay. I'm over it. I'm done.
A while ago, they announced a Poppy's Playtime movie.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, God.
So, get ready
FNAF
for that.
FNAF had a movie. Now, all the wannabe FNAFs, they got to get a movie, too.
Yeah, Final Fantasy Freddy's 2 got a poster a couple weeks ago.
No, I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
That one, you know, that one could be really good.
Yeah.
I was fine with the first Final Fantasy Five Nights at Freddy's movie. I don't think it was amazing, but I had a good time with it. People said it was, like, horrible, and I was like, that was fine. It was good. It's a FNAF movie.
I like it. That's fine.
But yeah, I think that's all we got for you guys today.
Yep.
On Happy Halloween, remember Sam's 4 Halloween rules from the Trick or Treat movies, guys. Wear a costume, which Sage is already breaking.
I'm breaking
it. Don't blow jack-o'-lanterns. They'll have to go up by themselves, which Sage is currently blowing at a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns on the set.
I'm doing that right now.
Hand out candy, which
not
Sage is not doing that.
Hate
and always check your candy, and I know for a fact that Sage is not doing that.
Actually putting razors into my candy and then not checking them. So.
And then you're eating them yourself?
Yes.
So you're not even handing them out, you're just giving them to yourself. You're eating razor blades.
I'm just eating razor blades that are covered in Snickers.
So I guess Sam is going to visit your house, and as long with the three ghosts of Christmas, no, Halloween past, present, and future.
Yeah, Alfred
you
Hitchcock,
are Scrooge,
Wes
that
Craven,
famously hates
one other guy.
Yeah, Sean Cunningham. He's not dead, but he can visit.
Yeah, Sean Cunningham. Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. This was Frankenstein's on Air, live from Ybor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, and we'll be back next week. We're done with things going wrong and the studio being down and hurricanes happening. We'll be back on air consistently now this time.
Yep.
See you then.
See ya. Bye.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-a-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Super Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Super Shamrock.
Wanna try ya, crazy baby girl, there ain't nothing like ya. In a Porsche, so right I had to get ya. Bag it up, let's roll. You can go see how you handle as I
cruising control as I make you turn around. Hey, let me turn up your sound.
Fast life.